the volume.
The Colin Cowherd Podcast brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any fantasy sport, there is a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win. Hi, everybody. Welcome in. A couple of minutes. Nick Wright joins us. Talk some NBA playoffs. First of all, I spent the weekend in Chicago. You know, I never understand when these people complain about big cities. There's an old saying. It's one of my favorite. Nobody knows the country like somebody that's lived in their same town their entire life. Folks, you need to get out. Yes, Chicago's expensive. Yes, LA's expensive. Yes, New York's expensive. You know why? You know why those taxes are so much? Because they have 10 million people on their roads and bridges. They're great cities. They're never boring. I had so much fun in Chicago this weekend. So I'm thinking about this before Nick Wright gets here. One of the things that the NBA is probably conflicted with, they would love to get the Brooklyn Nets and the Lakers in the finals. You'd get Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, five of the 10 biggest stars, five of the seven, eight biggest stars. But what would the message be to the NBA fans and other star players if two teams that rarely played together all year got to the finals? There's really no way to solve this issue unless you have real initiatives to stay with the same teams, which right now in the NBA, when you get drafted by a team after 4 years, your first contract extension so favors the team that drafted you financially that you almost have to stay. Players just don't leave. But boy, by 7 years, players want to join forces. And you can't blame them. I mean, think about James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant. What'd they play together this year? Five games? LeBron, Anthony Davis. Barely played in the last 2 months. But if your star players and realize I can join forces, I can play 50 games instead of 75 or 80 and get to the finals. You understand why players move, but it's not a great look for the league when stars can join forces, build almost no chemistry, skip large chunks of the regular season, and what do you know? We made the finals. So it's a little bit of a conflict for the league because you know they want stars to go further in the playoffs. That's ratings, and the NBA has struggled with ratings the last 2 years. My gut feeling is Brooklyn doesn't make the finals. Lakers, I feel about 70-30 they do. With that, let's bring in Nick Wright, my buddy, first things first at FS1. Well, Nick, it's always great when sports fans need a flow chart to figure out sports, the play-in game. So is it, do you buy it, or do you look at what the Clippers did, which is they appear to be very disincentivized to win, I understand the value of what Adam Silver's trying to create, but it's almost like our tax system. Rich people still get around it, right?
So here's what I think. I think that, and David Griffin, the guy that runs the Pelicans, used to run the Cavs, said this on the broadcast tonight in the Pelicans-Lakers game, that he thinks a play-in for the 8 seed seems a little more fair than the play-in for the 7. That if you have a year where a team goes 45-37 and all of and is the 7 seed, and all of a sudden they could lose 2 in a row and not make the playoffs, that doesn't seem totally fair. But I actually think typically I like the play-in, and you're not, everyone's worried about, I'm sure we're going to get into it, the Lakers potentially getting bounced. But the situation they're going to find themselves is this, is if the Lakers were in a 7-game series, up 3-2, with game 6 against Golden State and a game 7 against Memphis, would anyone think they're going to lose that series? No. And that's what the play-in is. But to solve what you're talking about, like the Clippers cowardly tanking away from the Lakers' side of the bracket, I've always been a fan of draft your playoff opponent, that the Jazz are the 1 seed. Their reward is look at who makes the playoffs, 5, 6, 7, 8, and pick them. And then the 2 seed is going to be Phoenix. Their reward is of who's left, you know, whether it's 5, 6, and 8, pick them. And then you would have people really fighting for seeding and fighting for the best possible record because you're not locking yourself into matchups.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought what makes the NFL playoffs great is that Patrick Mahomes bangs up his toe and Cleveland has a chance. With Mahomes out to win the game.
Yep.
Whereas if you're going to have a 7-game first round series, you're not going to have upsets. So correct. What's the point? So to me, the answer in this has always been the owners. People want to bang on the players. It's the owners willing to say 3 games first round series, 5 games next 2 rounds, 7 in the finals. Because then, you know, you could have bad games. You can go, you know, LeBron's had 2 or 3 games in a series when he loses confidence in his jumper. But if you're going to have a 7-game first, second round series, you're not going to have upsets with LeBron James.
Yeah, I mean, today was the anniversary. I don't know if you remember it, of the Allen Houston shot against the Miami Heat. It was the runner that bounced front of the rim, back of the rim, and in. And that was an 8 seed beating a 1 and an 8 seed that went on to the NBA Finals. That was a best of 5. The famous Dikembe Mutombo Nuggets team that beat the awesome Sonics team. That was a best of 5. Now, we've had a few 8 seeds beat 1 seeds since then, but usually something really weird is involved, like Derrick Rose goes down in the series and now all of a sudden they're not a 1 seed anymore. Or those We Believe Warriors just are actually a terrible matchup for the Mavs. You're not going to have massive upsets the longer you draw out a series, which I would argue the NBA doesn't really want massive upsets. Like the NBA, I know, you know, LeBron said, fire the play-in guy. And then there was articles written basically saying the play-in guy is going to get a raise. They're going to get Lakers Warriors in the play-in. Yeah, this is a massive success for the league as long as the Lakers and the Warriors both actually make the tournament. If all of a sudden, instead of Jazz Warriors in round one, you end up with Jazz Spurs or Jazz Grizzlies, that's a loss for the league. No matter what big of a number Lakers Warriors gets on a one-off, that's a huge loss for the league.
I said this in my opening rant. The NBA's got a little bit of a tug of war on their hands. They would love to have Brooklyn and the Lakers in the finals. You've had 5 of the biggest 8 players in the league.
Yep.
But what is the message to the fans if KD, Harden, and Kyrie barely play together, LeBron, AD missed the last month and a half mostly, and they still make the finals? It certainly incentivizes free agents to just go join star teams. You can miss 30 games. There's no reason to play a full slate.
Right. And so LeBron and AD, and people are going to say, oh, Nick, this is because you're a LeBron guy. LeBron and AD's situation, I think, is a little different in this regard, is that both those guys suffered significant injuries around the same time. Much like I felt last year about the Clippers, that if the Clippers won the title last year, it was going to have a bad butterfly effect on the league moving forward because the Kawhi's load management was going to just become, oh, that's how you win a title. And the NBA doesn't want that. If the Nets win, when it's, you know, Kyrie took 2 sabbaticals during the season, they were uber cautious with Durant and then uber cautious with Harden. It's like, no, we don't really need to play together. That, to me, does put up, not tarnish on their title if they win it, but on the importance of the regular season. Conversely, if Philly beats them or Milwaukee beats them, but I'll say Philly. Philly made it very clear they cared about the 1 seed. They cared about the regular season. They cared about the 1 seed.
Yep.
And if they end up beating them in a series where the game 7's in their building, I think that is important. I think it's like tells other teams, guys, at the end of the year, your road to the finals is going to matter, and you should really care about the 1 seed rather than to say, ah, who cares? We're just more talented. We're going to win.
So I think both of us agree that there are fundamental problems with the way Brooklyn is set up. Number one is they don't have size. They can't defend Giannis. They can't defend Embiid. I don't think they're a finals team. And I also think secondarily, much like the Clippers last year, they're easy to buy into because on their best nights, they're really a handful.
Yep.
But you got to win 4 games in a series, whereas I think Milwaukee could punish them 6 straight games. Giannis, yep, six straight games. So I think I like Milwaukee out of the East or Philadelphia. I'm going to go with Milwaukee this year. Jrue Holiday and PJ Tucker are really big adds.
So there's the thing. So that right there is a great example of folks assigning the same weaknesses that Milwaukee had last year and the year before to a team that is fundamentally different because they added, if PJ Tucker is a nice addition and a good playoff player, Jrue Holiday is a massive upgrade over what they've had in the playoffs at point guard. Malcolm Brogdon was a good player, but he's not that level. And Bledsoe was a guy who historically has just gotten worse and worse in the playoffs. Jrue Holiday, on the other hand, he is one of the most unheralded players in the league because so much of his value comes on defense. He's tough. He's going to be there. And so I totally agree with you that Milwaukee is, even though their regular season record isn't as good as it was last year, their defense isn't as good, Giannis isn't going to win MVP like he did last year, Milwaukee is a fundamentally different team. And we've talked about this before, much like OKC took a chunk of flesh out of the Warriors in 2016, and then the Cavs finished them off. Just by virtue of having to play Milwaukee in round two, because you were laissez-faire in the regular season, even if you beat them, then you have Philly waiting for you in round three. That's a hell of a series, man. That's a tough-ass series for them to deal with.
Hey, golf fans. This weekend, FanDuel is hooking new users up with an instant bonus up to $500 when you make your first fantasy deposit. So just sign up to unlock your deposit bonus. Then use that bonus to play in this weekend's $500,000 PGA Eagle contest, where the first place winner takes home $100,000 in cash. All right, fantasy golf on FanDuel, really easy to play. You pick six golfers for your lineup. One lineup needed for an entire weekend of action. Easy scoring, you get points for birdies, eagles, etc. Fast payouts, get paid in as little as 24 hours. But most of all, I love the variety of contests you can enter. Okay, there's the big major contests, there's the daily snake draft contest for daily action, final round contest, a lot of them. The field's loaded for this weekend's major championship, which makes for some exciting fantasy golf. So get in on the action, download the FanDuel Fantasy app today. Sign up to unlock your instant deposit bonus up to $500. Age and location restrictions apply. So you're a sports fan, right? That's why you're listening. But if you're considering getting in on the fun of sports gambling, I want to let you know about a great resource, the Action Network. The Action Network is where fans go when they're ready to bet smarter and turn a profit betting on sports. In fact, their free Action Network app, free, recently named the best app in sports betting. With the Action app, you can, one, see the latest picks and articles from the Action Network gambling experts, two, compare odds from different sports books, and three, track every bet you make so you always know how your picks are doing. So, if the game means more to you, download the free Action Network app and start betting smarter. Yeah, and we also dismissed Milwaukee, and there has been this sort of pressure on Giannis to advance.
Yep.
Once you're dismissed, that goes away. Nobody's talking Milwaukee. It's Brooklyn or the Sixers or Miami because they got to the final in the bubble. Yep. So Milwaukee feels like a four seed, and they feel like a lot of the public feels they're a four seed with no chance. So I like Milwaukee in the East. Now let's go to the West.
Hold on. Can I just interrupt you? Can I interrupt you real quick? The Clippers did it. They successfully completed the most embarrassing and intentional tank we've ever seen. They just lost. So the Clippers, in their final two games of the regular season, I just want America to understand what has happened here.
Yeah.
Final two games of the season, they were playing the Rockets, who had won 9 of their previous 55 games.
Right.
They were 9 and I think 46 in their last 55. They lost to the Rockets. They just now lost to Oklahoma City, which Oklahoma City not only hadn't won this month and had only won, oh my God, Oklahoma City, for the record, prior to tonight, had won once since March 30th. Think about that. We're in the middle of May. They had one win in the entire month of April and zero wins this month. That team just beat the Clippers. So the Clippers, by doing that, just guaranteed they're the four seed, and they will, the earliest they could possibly play the Lakers is the conference finals. And I, listen, I have not been as hard on the Clippers this year as I was in years past. I think this is a bad look for them in this regard. I think it's strategically bad, first of all, because I would argue if you're going to have to beat the Lakers to make the finals anyway, I would want them this year earlier than later. LeBron coming off an injury, AD coming off an injury, Schroeder coming off the COVID protocol, the Lakers having coming off the all the play-in stuff where they won't be rested. If you're going to get them, you're going to have to get them early. And if you're the Clippers, aren't you supposed to think we can beat anybody? And you're all of a sudden just punting on your seed because you're afraid of the Lakers who you have to beat. That, to me, that's a move you make if you are a team across conferences. If you're the Knicks and it's like winning one playoff series this year is a huge accomplishment. We want the best matchup possible. For the Clippers, who it's finals or bust, to throw their last two games and have the, to me, that's just a wild circumstance. Just insane.
Well, you know, what's interesting about the Clippers, I got into this last week. They are the only good team in the league that is atrocious with under 5 minutes to play. The other four are like Houston, Oklahoma City. They're the only bad team. And I said, what does it take at the end of games to be great? LeBron's great. Chris Paul is great. Steph Curry's great late in games. Why? Because they communicate. They're verbal. Very verbal players. Sometimes Chris Paul is so verbal, he's offensive to players. When Kawhi is your go-to, and in the NBA historically, players lean on stars late. It's their game late. When Kawhi, who joined San Antonio and Toronto's culture, is asked to form the Clippers culture, this is 2 years now. The Clippers have been awful late in games. That is what happens when Kawhi is your North Star, in my opinion.
Well, I think it's a very legit. I think that's the almost metaphysical, the non basketball but still basketball point. And the basketball point is when your best player is not either a dominating big or a guy who can score and playmake for others, you're a little limited. And Kawhi, as great as he is, he is not a playmaker. So San Antonio, first of all, he was never the best player when they were winning titles. He was a complimentary player. Toronto, while he was clearly their best player, Kyle Lowry had the ball in his hands and was setting things up, and then Kawhi was taking advantage of it. Like there's a, I know you are not a big triple-double guy, and triple-doubles at some point have become slightly overrated. But for a guy of Kawhi's stature, to, I believe, have one career triple-double because he only has, I think, two career games with 10-plus assists, it just shows a limitation on that part of his game. And if your second-best player is the exact same guy in Paul George with the exact same limitations, then I think you're going to struggle late in games in the biggest spots.
You know, it's... I think we feel, you and I feel kind of the same about the East, is that Philly or Milwaukee will advance, and Brooklyn's flawed. I think in the West, we also feel the same, that if LeBron is healthy, the Lakers will win. But, and I do think the league's a baby step league. It's asking way too much for the Suns to be bad and then win the West.
Yep.
I can see them winning one, two series, not winning the West. Utah's fascinating because I think they're the classic regular season team.
I had a GM tell me that exact thing.
Okay, same thing. So they've all played together under Quinn Snyder's system. They play hard every night. If you go to their games, I go to about one or two games a year there because I have a place in Utah. It's almost collegiate. It feels like Green Bay and Lambeau. Yep. They play hard. Every home game's an event. It's the only thing to do in Salt Lake City. And so they really bring it. So when you're talented and play hard, you win 55 games a year. I mean, Mike Dunleavy told me this years ago. If you're not talented and play hard, you can win 40.
Yep.
Just, I mean, you know, this year, you know, if you start looking at teams that, you know, and I think the Suns are the greatest example, is they're committed to defense, they play really hard, and they're kind of talented with a Hall of Fame point guard. But when I look at Utah, they're not athletic on the wing. I'm not sure Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert will ever coexist at a high level. It's got an Embiid-Simmons feel to it. And I feel like I wouldn't be shocked if Utah won their opening series and then lost in round two.
I'll tell you this much. I wouldn't be shocked if they're facing a seventh game against Golden State. NBA playoffs are hard if you don't have the best player on the court. And like in typically, who wins series? The team with the best player or a team that has like players 2, 3, 4. You know what I mean? And so and players 2, 3, 4, a couple of them are like MVP-ish candidates. And so it is the problem with Utah is they have a bunch of guys that are somewhere between they might have more players on their team that are top 50, but not top 15. You know what I mean? Like, so I like Mike Conley. I like Ingles. I like Bogdanovich. Gobert's a defensive player of the year. And Donovan Mitchell's a really good player. Are any one of those guys like one of the 15 best players in basketball? Of course not. I know the Utah fans will say, oh, Gobert's defense, whatever. Like that's, which is why, so Denver until this year, that was their limitation. Was they have a, you know, Jamal Murray's good. Michael Porter can be good. You have these good role players. But it wasn't until Jokic took this leap that you could take them seriously. And this is why I think the West this year really, even though the Lakers, you know, have had a very odd season, it sets up so well for them. You just tick down the list. So you have Utah is not going to have the best player in any series they play. You then have Phoenix. Phoenix, to your point, the only guy on their roster that has won a playoff series, basically, is Chris Paul. They got a couple other guys that have had some playoff moments, but it's really just Chris Paul. Then three seed is the Nuggets. Jamal Murray went down. They've been good since then, but Jamal Murray went down, and Jokic has traditionally had real trouble slowing down Anthony Davis. We just talked about the Clippers. And then you've got Portland and Dallas, which are just two teams that are very limited defensively. Portland's a downright terrible defense. So it's like, who's left? It's like, oh, there's the Lakers, which is why I think right now there's going to be a little bit of buzz for Golden State, not necessarily to win the title, but or to win the conference. But it's like, man, every series they play in the West, except for against the Lakers, which they're not going to play them unless it's conference finals, they're going to have the best player and they're going to have experience and they're not going to be shook by the moment. All those things play in their favor.
Yeah, they're really small. I think they're actually, I think they don't match up with the Lakers at all.
Golden State?
Yeah.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. But they can make the playoffs without ever beating the Lakers because they can lose in the 7-8 and then just beat Memphis or San Antonio when they're in.
How surprised are you? Now, I have championed Steph Curry. I've said before, there are great players, Michael Jordan, LeBron, and then there are players that mean more for the league. And I think Steph falls into a very unique category. I mean, if you look at the impact of what Michael Vick meant for African-American quarterbacks, his impact to the sport is so much greater than his career.
Sure.
Steph Curry, though, his career's great, and his impact on the three ball is enormous. And I think, you know, there was always this sense that it's almost like people had amnesia that they won before Kevin Durant got there. And then it was, well, he doesn't play defense. Draymond, Kerr's a great coach. There's Klay Thompson. This year they've got nothing. Draymond's way past his prime. Klay's hurt. Kevin Durant's gone. Kelly Oubre, please. Wiseman gets hurt. And you start looking at Steph and you're like, oh my God. He really, like to me, he didn't separate from LeBron. But he separates from Kawhi. He separates from Giannis. He separates from Simmons. Like, I thought it was a time we almost have to acknowledge now. Yeah, okay, he's top 10 all time. I think we're in that category now.
Well, so going into this year, and people thought I was attacking him by saying this. I wasn't. I said, this is an important year for Steph because everyone watched the Warriors in 15 and 16, for example, and said, oh, okay, Steph is the perfect guy for that team. Like, you couldn't put Russ on right. that team and have them have anywhere close to success. Right. Couldn't have put Harden on those teams in 15 and 16 right. and had them had anywhere near that success. The reason I'm not including 17, 18 is with Durant and Clay, maybe you could have put a lot of guys as another person they're successful. But what we didn't know was, does that mean Steph could have done for the 17 Thunder what Russ did the year KD leaves? It's like, hey, I will lead the league in points. I will take this, you know, kind of motley crew of guys. We're going to get to the sixth seed, and then we're going to get beat in the first round, but I will carry you to the playoffs. Steph proved that this year. Steph, because especially if you look at their record without him, because I think they're 1-7 or 1-8 in games he doesn't play, they have a really good record when he plays. They are, yeah. everyone schemes their entire offense around stopping him, and they can't. So that does elevate him. This was an important season. It's weird to say you almost learned more about Steph this year than you did in their final championship with Durant, because it was different things were asked of him. He's older. He's going to win the scoring title at 32 years old, 32 points per game. It's pretty damn impressive. Or 33 years old, pardon me, 32 points per game. Oldest guy to win a scoring title since Jordan. And he's going to finish top five MVP. And his second best player is Draymond Green, who can't shoot the basketball. Like, that's impressive. It's really impressive what he did this year.
So let's go to the Lakers, where I do feel if LeBron's ready to play, I think the size alone, Drummond may not work against Brooklyn in the finals, but I don't think they get there. I think yep. Drummond can be an additive player against the Bucks or Philadelphia. I look at LeBron. Do you think deep down? So it's if you really go back to the beginning of the season, it's amazing how bad Anthony Davis was, and this was the year LeBron was going to peel back minutes, yeah. and it was 80's team, yep. and he was not in shape.
He wasn't
so
ready
I
for
have
it.
And I have a pretty good source inside the Lakers. So he is a little bit like Rasheed Wallace. He doesn't work out. He's got a dad body. He keeps his T-shirt on all the time. LeBron makes fun of him. He's not in great shape. He is so naturally gifted that he can just show up. And I covered Rasheed Wallace and give you 36 points on some nights and defend Duncan and Garnett as well as anybody ever did in, yep. in the apex of their career. So what's happening to Anthony Davis is he's never really committed to his body, and therefore his body is not rewarding him. And as he gets older, there are more groin issues, more ankle issues. This league, in retrospect, was a disaster for him. He wasn't ready to play. He got hurt multiple times.
This season.
And it's one thing. LeBron understands if you're not him. But what LeBron respected about D-Wade was he played at the end of his career with Miami. He couldn't play back-to-backs well. But LeBron knew how hard he played. I do wonder if LeBron looks at AD and thinks, bruh, you don't even commit to the weight room.
So here's the only pushback I'll give you on that. I also wonder what for the Lakers, because if you remember, LeBron was pissed about how early this season was starting. Like right. he was one of the vocal ones, and he usually does not step out from the league. Like he was pissed that they had such short amount of time off. And the Lakers got off to that insane start. They were, I think, 21-6, whatever it was. It was when everyone was like, oh, they're clearly the best team in the league. And then AD had like the Achilles soreness and missed a couple games, came back, and then missed a ton of time. And while he was yep. out, LeBron missed a ton of time because he gets the ankle injury. I do wonder if LeBron and AD talked and said, we're going to be fine no matter what. We've given ourselves such a big cushion by our start that there's no chance we fall out of the playoffs. Now, I don't think they thought they were going to fall to the play-in. They end up the final standings are going to be a three-way tie for fifth place, and the Lakers end up in seventh because of the tiebreaker. So even with how bad it was, they're a half game away from being the five seed here. And saying, listen, what I need is for you to be full go and totally ready when the playoffs start, and then we're actually going to have, for the first time in forever, a real off season. And so I think that's why those stretch of games, remember LeBron came back and then went away again. And in that stretch of time, AD had some of his best games of the season. He had the 42-point game. He had the game against the Knicks where he was like 8 of 23, but the Knicks beat everybody up. Like, nobody shoots well against them. He was great defensively. He had an awesome game against Portland that they ended up losing because Kuzma was like 1 of 11 in the game. So I feel like AD like showed enough to say, I'll be ready, I'll be good. And to his credit, he has been a guy, even back in New Orleans, he's been a monster in the playoffs. Never missed a playoff game, played big minutes every playoff game he's ever had. So you very well may be right that Anthony Davis's like non-basketball workout routine is closer to Kevin Durant's than to LeBron James's, which is, I work on my game, not so much in the weight room. But I feel like there maybe is a level of trust between those two that come the playoffs, you're going to be the best version of yourself. And LeBron looks like a different person than in the two games when he came back from the ankle injury initially. When he came back initially, I was like, oh boy, he does not look right. And now these last two games, he looks, you know, 90-some percent. He looks very, very close to 100%.
Well, and you remember last year when he got that sabbatical, it was probably the best he had looked from an energy standpoint in 7 years.
It was good for him.
So, yeah, he has not played a ton of basketball in the last 365 days. He just hasn't. So his body, to some degree, he's rested. You know, I do want to talk about the Knicks because I think it's better for the NBA when they're good. And I watched them three separate times down the stretch. And they're a really easy team to forecast. They don't have enough juice offensively to win a second playoff series. Tom Thibodeau's teams, this is sort of classic. They practice harder. They play harder. They play more minutes. They're really good in the regular season. They're the classic. I was searching for a team earlier. I said the Suns, what I meant was the Knicks, is they just outplay people. You can win a lot of games in this league without a star player if you play hard and you're well coached. I do think, though, Thibodeau's history tells you that once you get to the playoffs and everybody plays hard, there's limitations on what the Knicks can do. But Julius Randle's a fascinating player. Because while he was with the Lakers, he was highly efficient. He was about an 18-point-a-game guy, 55% from the field, played hard, developing player. He was ascending. And they bailed on him. And my theory was they bailed on him because in the West, there was a shooting gallery. The Rockets took 100 threes. The Warriors took 100 threes. And it's like, okay, we're losing the math contest here. And so they bailed on Julius Randle. And the Knicks are like desperate and take him. And they'll probably overpay for him because they're the Knicks. The question becomes, what is the value of Zion until he can hit a three or Julius Randle? Mathematically, can you win a title if they're your one or do they have to be your two?
I think Julius has to be your two at best. I think Zion, the math works on two-pointers if you're shooting 62% on it. Like the whole argument for a three versus a two is you can be a 50% shooter from two, and that means you only have to be a 33% shooter from three, right? But if you're a 62% shooter from two like Zion is, well, that's a 41% shooter from three. That leads the league. That's awesome. So Zion, I think Zion's a different type of cat. Like I just did my All-NBA. You know, I don't have an official vote because for some reason the league won't give me an official vote. I can't imagine who watches more basketball than me, why I shouldn't have a vote. And I'm doing my All-NBA forwards. And I'm like, Zion's second team, All-NBA. The only forwards who I thought were better than him this year are Giannis, Kawhi, and LeBron. That's it. Like Jimmy Butler, Julius Randle are third team forwards. I think Zion was better than them. I think Zion got screwed a bit this year because I don't think Stan Van Gundy unlocked him right. And the Pelicans didn't have enough shooting. He was just totally unstoppable. Just a totally, thoroughly unstoppable force. So I think Do I think he has to expand his game a little bit? Yes. He's not currently yet ready to be the best guy, but I wouldn't put a ceiling on him the way I might put a ceiling on. I think Randle's had a great season, is a nice story, but he can't be. I don't think he can ever be the best player on a title team. I think Zion could be. I do, by the way. I don't know. It's your podcast, so I don't know what you have scheduled for us to do, but we now have all the games are done. So we have the official bracket. If you want to, I can go through it if we want to like give preliminary thoughts on it. I can't give my official picks because I have to really like drill down on it. But we do now know what the bracket is going to be.
All right. Throw the games at me.
The play-in we'll do the play-ins in the East. It's
yes.
Boston, Washington.
I'll take the Celtics.
So the Celtics would then go on to play Brooklyn, and then Washington would play the winner of Indy, Charlotte. And so that's that. I think Boston and Washington will be the two that move on there, right? You know what I mean?
Yep,
no matter.
Yep, yep.
And both of us would have Philly or Brooklyn in a series being either one of them. So the play-in part's easy. Then you have Knicks, Hawks, which is going to be Trae Young is going to get. He'll score a lot of points, but I would set the over under technicals for Trae Young in that series at 3.5. They are going to go after him in a way that is going to, I think, demoralize him. Because Trae does a lot of funny stuff, like trying to draw these cheap fouls, and the Knicks will just like clothesline him. And so I think the Knicks should be the slight favorites in that series. And then one of the most interesting round one series, Milwaukee, Miami. Milwaukee could have tanked out of that. Milwaukee, he played Miami 2 days ago, and Milwaukee was essentially locked into where they needed to be. They could have let Miami win, so Miami moved up to the 5. They beat them. Like, they wanted to play them. I like Milwaukee. I think they'll win. That is a tough damn series, man.
Well, Bam, they've got size in Bam. They've got shooting in Robinson and Hero. They've got a star in Jimmy Butler. So it's unfortunate the Bucks and Heat actually play.
Yep.
Because they really, you're going to have one of the three best teams, arguably, get eliminated. Listen, I think Miami would be a tough series for Brooklyn.
If Brooklyn had lost today to the Cavs, which obviously was not likely to happen, that we would have gotten it. If Brooklyn would have lost to the Cavs, they would have fallen to the 3. And then Miami-Brooklyn, to me, that's a son of a bitch for Brooklyn. And the other thing Miami has against Brooklyn, maybe against anybody in the East, certainly against Brooklyn or Milwaukee, is the better coach. Spoelstra is a far better postseason coach. Nash, we've never seen, so you just no experience. And I don't, you know, I don't yet know that I can ever trust Budenholzer. So there's the East. The West, the play-in obviously is Lakers, Warriors. We both think the
Lakers
beat the Warriors.
Yeah.
And then they would play, the Warriors would play the winner of Grizzlies, Spurs. Let's just advance the Grizzlies, right? So then this is what you have. The 2-7 is Phoenix against the Lakers.
I take the Lakers on experience. Yeah.
Phoenix's reward for this unbelievable season is they get the Lakers in round one. That sucks for them, man.
Yeah.
And it sucks for me because I said Chris Paul's the MVP. I know you like that take. You're with it. And now he's going to go home in round one. All right. Jazz Warriors. I gotta look at it. The Jazz, I know, kicked the hell out of them in the regular season.
Yeah.
But also, Donovan's coming back from an injury. That's a tough series.
It is, but my problem with Golden State is they're so small, and it's kind of a flaky team. Kelly Oubre, Andrew Wiggins, like Wiggins the other night had just like this 38-point game. You don't have any idea what you're getting from him. I will say the Warriors have put him in a role that works. Just give us 22. You know, I mean, like, they've really said, listen, just be the 2, the 3. There's no pressure on him. And that's what he is, kind of. He's never been a go-to guy. But, boy, they're tiny. I just don't see them matching up with Gobert. I don't think they match up with the Lakers. I don't think they match up with the I don't think they match up with the Clippers.
No, there's a reason why they're the 8 seed. Is they don't match up really well with a lot of really great teams. They need, in order to beat really good teams, they need Steph to go score, do what he did today. Let's go score 45. But then the next two Western Conference first round series are fascinating. The Clippers chose this. It's Clippers Mavs. Man, the Mavs took them 6 last year with Luka on a bad ankle and Kristaps not really playing in the series. Now, Kristaps is not play, you know, he hasn't been a huge factor for them this year. But that's a fascinating series, Clippers-Mavs.
Well, because Luka's a great finisher, and the Clippers are the worst finishing good team in the league. So that's probably the Milwaukee-Miami series of the West, where the matchup – I mean, Miami matches up with Milwaukee very well, with a better coach. So here, Dallas has – Carlisle's got a championship, so does Ty Lue. I do not trust the Clippers in a close series, and Luka may be as good a finisher right now as the West has.
And Luka, you feel like Luka's worth at least one game by himself, maybe two, and then all of a sudden, like, it starts getting the other thing with the, and then we'll get to the other series. The other thing with the Clippers that is so interesting is Kawhi can walk after this year. Nobody's talking about it, but he's not under contract. Like, he signed a 2-year deal. And so Paul George, they re-signed this offseason. They didn't re-sign Kawhi. Now, Kawhi just bought a massive house in L.A. I think he plans on staying. But if they get bounced in round one and Miami is sitting there with the cap space for him, I do think that becomes, like, an interesting conversation. And so I think that one's interesting. And then Denver against the Blazers is the 3-6. I think Denver's will win. But like those games will be 130, 125 every time. And it'll be that Denver's backcourt cannot match up with Portland's backcourt. And Portland's frontcourt cannot deal at all with Jokic and Michael Porter Jr. and Aaron Gordon. So Denver should win that series, but those are two great. I think we have three potentially extraordinary first round series: Mavs, Clippers, Nuggets, Blazers, and Bucks, Heat. With a potential, if Steph goes crazy, for Jazz, Warriors to at least be interesting.
Yeah, I think you're getting to a point in Portland. If Portland can't get past Denver, you got to break up the CJ McCullough, yes, Dame Lillard. I mean, they're just a duplication. One's an A-plus guy, one's a B-plus guy. They've always struggled with getting a good athletic wing.
They traded for Norman Powell this year, and he's good, but that's not getting you over that. That's not getting you there. They traded for Robert Covington. Like, there's these half measures. They can't get Dame is good enough with the right cast to be the best player on the team that makes the finals. But he needs, yes, the right cast, and he needs a bat. You know who he needs next to him in the backcourt? Drew Holiday. He needs somebody who can defend and help you out in that. It's just you have two small, thin, offensive-minded guards who are awesome. But, I mean, Portland this year is worse on defense than Brooklyn. Portland's 27th. Brooklyn's 25th. I mean, they are horrible defensively. And so that's tough to win a playoff series that way.
Yeah, and it's hard because Dame so controls the series. It's hard for Terry Stott to come down on him for his defense because he is the lone star with Bradley Beal, who appears to want to finish his career with one team.
That's
right. Portland's never been a free agent market. I mean, hell, they've never hosted an all-star game because they don't have big enough hotel space. So it's like Dame's going to just do what Dame wants to do, and he doesn't give much of an effort on the defensive end. So you have to go big and go get a wing.
By the way, we didn't talk about it, and you said in the Boston-Washington matchup, you in the play-in, you like Boston. For our shows, you should root for Washington because if Washington wins, we then get Russ against KD and Harden. We get it'd be Wizards Nets. And that, I mean, obviously the Wizards can't win that series, but Russ can just be a maniac for a week and a half, and Beal's back healthy. Like, they could win a game or two.
And it really, you get to a point in Boston now. It's been this sort of, it's been this draft experiment. We're going to accumulate a million picks. And with Brad Stevens, they get one star and it doesn't work. And you watch them this year. This is a bad Celtic team. They're not good late in games. They're not as good defensively. Jason Tatum, he feels a good player, but there's no plus to the A. He's an A, but he's not A plus.
Yep.
And you start looking at Boston now and you're like, okay, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown.
Well, their problem is this. Those are good. So there's Boston's problem is twofold. One is Ainge had the heist of the century against Brooklyn and got two really great players out of it. One really good player and one potentially great player in Brown and Tatum. And then was terrible at every other part of his job. Made one huge trade ever for Kyrie. Kyrie hated it there after 2 years and bolted. Made two massive free agent signings, Horford and Hayward. Horford was good, but not great. And Hayward got snake bit. He got hurt and it just never was the guy and never would pull the trigger on any of these trades. And the draft picks he did make weren't good. So like he really screwed up the next parts of that, you know, if for college graduation, your parents buy you a house and then you don't get it insured and you don't put furniture in it, and you don't get it, you just end up squandering the biggest gift anybody's ever gotten. The other thing that sucks for Boston is this. Tatum and Brown. So let's just say Tatum, he's their best player. You look at the East and it's like, okay, Giannis is young. If they ever play Milwaukee in a series, they will never have the best player. It's like, okay, that's not good. And then you look at, okay, Brooklyn. Well, KD's not that young. Harden's a little younger. Kyrie's even younger. If they play Brooklyn in a series, how long until they have the best player? 4 years from now? Oh, okay, Philly. They play Philly in a series. How long until they have Boston has the best player? Never. Embiid, you know, and Embiid's young. So it's like your best guy. There is a player of similar age on three teams in the East better than your best guy and all locked up. Like you just, and it's hard to win one round of the playoffs so you don't have the best guy, much less potentially two or three rounds like you would have to. They're just, I think Boston's in a really bad spot.
Yeah, I think Boston's to a point now. It's a crowded sports market. I think they have to go for it. I think they have to spend a lot of money and go for it. And that's the reality. I think I'll take Milwaukee in the East. I'll take the Lakers in the West. And then I think you have a really good finals. If LeBron's healthy, I would take the Lakers. By the way, I will say this, is that Greg Popovich, this is the Belichick thing, is that if Mac Jones can't play, Belichick becomes Popovich. Pretty irrelevant now that Duncan's gone and Parker's gone. If Mac Jones can't play,
right.
Nothing against Cam, but you're not winning that division with Josh Allen. You're at best a wild card team.
Sure.
That's all you're going to be with Josh Allen, Sean McDermott. Now they've got so many good defensive linemen up last 2 years in the draft. And I sit there and I look at Popovich today. And first of all, he was arrogant and stubborn on threes. He didn't want to play the math game. I mean, the DeMar DeRozan trade is a bad trade. I mean,
a terrible trade.
It's a terrible move. I mean, DeRozan,
since
he was
USC.
When you
look at what other people got for their stars, to get DeMar, to trade Kawhi and Danny Green, and you get DeRozan, Jakob Poeltl, and a bad pick, that's a terrible trade.
Terrible
Flatly
trade.
Terrible.
And it was arrogant. It was, and this is what Belichick did. Belichick now acknowledges, because I've been on him for 2 years about this, I was told by two people inside the Patriot organization in mid-January, Belichick would tell the scouts, I've got it from here. We started losing scouts. They were all like, well, what's the point? None of my work counts. And Belichick acknowledged, I'm going to go more with scouts because N'Keal Harry, all the Patriot scouts said, he can't separate. Do not rely on Herm Edwards. And he went against him and he can't play. He's a four. He's not even a three. He's a four. And so I think Belichick and Popovich, similarly, you start believing in the system over the player. You kind of buy into what everybody's told you, you're a genius. If Mac Jones can't play, they're going to be drafting 15th for the next 4 years.
Right.
And I think Popovich is in that same spot. They're not relevant.
Which is why I think the difference between the two is I think Popovich is going to retire soon. And I don't think Bill will. So like Bill, what would be tough for Bill is if he wants to do this another 5 years and it's 7-9, or I guess these days, 8-9, you know, 9-8, 10-7, not contending. And by the way, even if he's right on Mac Jones, I don't think Mac Jones has like superstar upside. I think Mac Jones has like good quarterback. Like, I think his upside is a poor man's Matt Ryan.
Yeah, or Kirk Cousins with more courage.
Yeah, which is around the right. Matt Ryan, I would say, like, if, yeah, on the Matt Ryan scale, Kirk Cousins is like an 85. So that's what I'm saying. Like, you know what I mean? About 85% of that player, that's not getting it done in today's NFL. It's not getting it done in today's NFL.
Okay, go to bed. Have a great show. We'll talk Wednesday, buddy.
Absolutely. Talk to you later, Kyle.
All right. NBA playoffs. That Bucks Heat series. I'm telling you, Miami matches up really well with Milwaukee, but I think it's Milwaukee's year. All right, go to the Volume Sports at Twitter, at Instagram. Sign up our podcast, rate, review, subscribe. We also have a YouTube channel. All right, we're done for Monday. We'll talk soon.
The volume.